Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today's show, we're gonna talk about 3.8 million missing houses. That's right, there's 3.8 million houses missing from our inventory of available supply. And you're thinking to yourself, how did we lose 3.8 million houses? Well, the way we lost 3.8 million houses is we never built them. No, we never built them. As a matter of fact, that is the demand forecasted for housing stock in the United States. 3.8 million houses. I mean, if you think about that, let's just say every house that's built has 3.5 residents in it. Yeah, I'm assuming you've got your significant other living with you, maybe 1.5 kiddos. Just run the numbers that way. That's housing for 14 million people. 14 million people. Now, there's a lot of data out there. As a matter of fact, what got me thinking about this was a fellow Lifestyles Unlimited member by the name of Daniel shot me over an email. We were kind of talking about the vaccine. He's getting the vaccine, and I was curious. I said, hey, keep me in mind when you get that second shot, because I'm just curious how it goes for you, because I've heard the good, the bad, and the ugly with regards to the vaccine. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to get a little intel on how it went for him. And apparently it went pretty well for him. He said it was a little bit after the second shot. He was kind of not a perfect day for him, but you know, he didn't have some of these symptoms that I've heard other people have. So I thought it was important to get that information. And along with that information, he shot me this Wall Street Journal article that's talking about the housing market having a shortage of 3.8 million single family homes. And that's based on the country's demand. That's what the country is saying. Hey, we want housing. We want to buy houses. Now, Freddie Mac was the source for this news article. And Freddie Mac, I'll get into that article a little later on in the show today, because it talks about the trend. It talks about how we got to this housing shortage. But the question I have is this. Is this a real shortage of housing? Do we have potentially 3.8 million families living on the streets? Or is this pent-up demand? Is this what Americans desire? Is this what they're trying to achieve? I mean, they're doing everything that society told them to do. And one of those things is, hey, the American dream is home ownership. Presidents run on that platform. Senators run on that platform. You know, chicken in every pot, that kind of thing. So the question I have is, are we really missing 3.8 million units of housing, or are we just not meeting the pent-up demand, the expectations that Americans have that they want a part of that American dream? They want home ownership, and we're kind of short a couple of houses. See, what I'm not seeing in the news is a lack of places to live. I'm not seeing news reports that, you know, family X had to live on the street because they couldn't find a place to live. Now, there are people that live on the street, and they live on the street for various reasons. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about people like you and me. You're living somewhere. Maybe you own your house. As a result of that, you're not part of that 3.8 million household shortage. Although if you sold your house and didn't buy another house, maybe you would provide an opportunity for somebody to buy your property. And that would take one house off of the shortage list. See, I think what we're dealing with here is desire. I think we're dealing with the desire that people have to be homeowners, because in the back of their mind, they think that, number one, it achieves a certain goal that society imprinted on your brain. Number two, you're never going to have to deal with a property owner or a landlord again, meaning you get all the benefits of owning that property. Yeah, and if something breaks, you also get the benefit of taking care of the repairs. Maybe you've been living in an apartment, and you know, home ownership is something that you desire because that's a status symbol for you. That's a measure of your success. See, I don't really know if we're really short 3.8 living units. I think we're really just short 3.8 living units that people could own themselves, because there's been a severe backlog in the construction industry. And when I get into that Freddie Mac article a little bit later on in the show, it'll highlight how this thing occurred. But at the end of the day, for the most part, people are living somewhere. And if they're not engaged in home ownership, then they're probably living somewhere where they're paying rent. And even if we create 3.8 million homes out of nowhere to meet this pent-up demand, I don't think it's going to impact us in the rental market, because we can't produce 3.8 million homes overnight. It takes a lot of time to build that kind of inventory. But here's one of the things that we have as real estate investors. A lot of us are invested in single-family properties that we have made very beautiful. And as we go through our investing strategy, as we do the things that we are programmed to do, because we've got our investing game plan laid out in front of us, we may choose to sell one of those houses so that we can take the money and buy some apartment communities. And that may put some housing back into the marketplace as a first-time opportunity. When we come back from the break, I'm going to expand this thought.
Del Wamsley explains how he found that speck of light that got him into the lifestyle.
I had a guy that used to come into the health club every day and work out for 4 hours a day, sit in the jacuzzi, swim, play racquetball, was happy, looked great, tan all the time. And one day I just asked him, what do you do for a living? And he said, Del, I own real estate.
Well, do you own real estate? Register for our live online free workshop and find out how you can get all the things you want out of life with passive income. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. Brought to you by Lifestyles Unlimited. Here's Lifestyles Unlimited founder and CEO, self-made multimillionaire, and national radio host, Del Wamsley, on getting the information you need to get through this.
So you ask yourself, isn't this the wrong time to get out of the stock market? Very well could be. But maybe it might go down. And then you ask yourself, man, if I would have had some of that money, I could have used it. People are going to be afraid. And the people who are in real estate that are losing money are going to be afraid. And they're going to want to get out. And when they do, we're going to be able to go in and buy at very advantageous prices that are going to change our family's future, quite honestly. So you need information on how to do that. You need the knowledge of how to get through this. You need to get into Lifestyles right now.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the 7 principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
We're back with the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We're here to answer your questions and help you become financially free.
Welcome back to the show. So we're talking about a Wall Street Journal article that just came out that was focusing on a situation in our economy. See, the Wall Street Journal says that the U.S. housing market is 3.8 million single-family homes short of what is needed to meet the country's demand. And they made that assessment based on looking at a recent Freddie Mac article that came out. Now, I will tell you, this is not something that is new. It's not new at all. As a matter of fact, the National Association of Realtors, back in December of 2020, they were talking about this in a report that they published, some of the research where they were looking at what do they think 2021 will look like for the housing market, for the sale of houses. And we as investors are interested in that, because at a certain point, if we're invested in single family houses, we may choose to sell those houses, and we may either sell them to, say, another investor, or we might sell them to the residents that are living in the property, or the resident may move out and we may just sell it on the open market to anybody who comes along that is interested in that property. Now, one of the things that we do is we go out and we find distressed properties, properties that have issues, properties that most people will turn their nose up at, properties that most people don't have the ability to purchase because either they don't know how to go about purchasing these properties, or they think they know how to purchase the properties, but what they find out is that they're putting a lot of their own personal capital into the acquisition and renovation of the property. And we don't think that's a smart way to do business. We believe in applying the correct forms of leverage throughout the process so you keep your capital outlays to a minimum. See, that's kind of the secret on how you make money in real estate. Yeah, your returns are based on the amount of money you inject into a deal. And then you manage those returns and you use those return rates to determine whether or not the asset you're looking at makes sense for your investing portfolio. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Here are my thoughts. I own single family properties. Now, I have a strategy that I'm following based on my goals and objectives that indicates to me I'm planning to hold certain single family assets for a certain amount of time. But here's the interesting thing. If there are 3.8 million people out there who are probably renting and they want to own property, I could make my property available to them. Now, I have to do the right thing by my residents in that property because I don't live in that property, any of those properties. I live in the property that I live in. But I've got business relationships with the people that do occupy my homes. So I'm not going to do anything to damage that relationship. However, there may come a time in the future when my resident decides they're going to move on. Maybe they took a different job and they have to leave, or maybe they're doing something else within their life. So our business relationship ends, they go do their thing, and then I have a decision to make. Do I find another great resident to live in that property and continue to own and operate that property? Or do maybe I take advantage of a white hot market? Yeah, think about it. And if you own property, you ought to be thinking about exit strategies for selling those properties. You know, maybe the market conditions in 2021 are creating an environment for you to obtain certain returns that you're projecting for your property. And maybe you're able to get it in 2021 as opposed to maybe 2022 or 2023, whatever you were thinking about the long-term hold to be. See, it's a good situation. Especially, let's say you've got six houses. I'm just picking a number out of the blue. And you're owning and operating those six properties. And your investment strategy is to own and operate those properties for a period of, let's say, 5 years. And let's say you're into year three. And your game plan is hold it for another 2 years. Because the pricing has the potential to go up. I'm not saying houses go up in value every year, but historically they do. But if you have people that are willing to overpay for property, it's an opportunity for you to maybe liquidate your holdings. But you have to think about, what are you going to do with the proceeds? Now, some of you might be thinking, you know what, this is actually a really good time for me to sell all six of those houses, get the proceeds from those houses, and then I can go buy maybe 12 distressed properties and fix those properties up. Bring back the glory days to those properties and make them available for residents. So you took six houses, you put them into the housing market for new home buyers. People came in and bought your property. And then you took the proceeds and you bought some more distressed assets. and just kind of did it again, wash, rinse, and repeat. But the difference is now you've got 12 assets as opposed to 6 assets, which means that you're probably looking at, I'll just throw a number out there, double your cash flows. You heard me correctly. Double your cash flows. Because if you had 6 houses producing $400 a month, that's $2,400. But if you have 12 houses producing $400 a month, well, that's a little bit more money, isn't it? It certainly is. It gives you a greater opportunity to increase your cash flow and to allow the equity to grow in these properties. And because we buy them correctly, we also capture equity in the deal, meaning we don't pay full retail price for the asset because of the way we do business. I mean, think about it. Let's say you had 12 houses producing $400 a month in cash flow. It's $4,800 per month. That's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's essentially replacing a $57,000-$58,000 a year income. Oh, and by the way, because that income is offset by the depreciation that you'll take on these properties, your tax liability is much lower than if you actually went to work to earn this money. I would submit to you that if you're going to work and making, say, $80,000 a year, you could step away from going to work making $80,000 a year and replace that with the income stream that comes from these 12 houses. That could be the thing that gets you retired. Or maybe you go in a completely different direction. You sell those 6 houses, you take the proceeds, and now you start investing in apartment communities. Man, I'll tell you what, there's some great opportunities for you. We come back, I'm going to get into this Freddie Mac article.
Del Wamsley talks about understanding the system.
A guy told me the other day on the radio, he says, you know, I understand the system. They let the stock market go up to feed our ego, to think we're getting somewhere, and then they crash it on us and take it all away. So now we're stuck. He says, I've lived through 2 of those cycles, so he started investing in real estate to get away from the cycle.
Are you ready to break the cycle? Start investing in real estate today. Find out how. Join Lifestyles Unlimited. Start with our live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. So I was just messing around with a mortgage calculator because I was trying to do some numbers here and figure out, you know, what the principal pay down is for a deal that I'm actually going to talk to you about a little later on in the show. And what I want to do first, though, is I want to give you an explanation of how the United States has arrived at this problem of having 3.8 million housing units short. And when we're talking 3.8 million units short, I believe what we're talking about is available housing for individuals that want to own their housing. I don't think we're 3.8 million units short when it comes to places for people to live. I don't think the homeless issue is so great right now that it's affecting 3.8 million households. I really don't. But according to Freddie Mac, they said that in the late 1970s, the construction of new entry-level homes averaged 418,000 per year. That's a pretty significant number. And during the 80s, mortgage rates increased dramatically. I mean, they rose from an average of 8.9%, which we would think today is a very high number, up to like 12.7%. Yeah, we had double-digit interest rates way back in that time period. And as a result of all that, the entry-level housing supply fell by more than 100,000 units from the previous reporting period to 314,000. So right now, we know that there is a decline in available housing stock for people to purchase. Then, in the 1990s, Freddie Mac says this. They say, a decline in mortgage rates led to a surge in purchase demand for new single-family construction, which reached a 20-year high by 1999. So now we've got demand fueling this need for more properties. Now, again, this is new housing stock. However, while new construction was high, entry-level supply continued to decline, dropping 207,000 units a year during the 1990s. So less and less affordable housing is in the marketplace. Because you got to remember, part of what was going on back then is that people were buying bigger properties. Yeah, maybe you lived in, say, 1,800 square feet, and you desired to have a 3,000 square foot home. Now, an 1,800 square foot property that you vacate, you may have been renting it, you may have owned it, however you vacated it. That's not necessarily the size for entry-level housing. And I'm going way into a rabbit hole, and I got to pull myself out. But let's get back into what occurred to create this problem. According to Freddie Mac, in the years 2000 to 2010, there was a substantial rise in new housing supply in response to, at that time, were record low interest rates. Yeah, they were the lowest I had seen in my lifetime. And here's the thing that was creeping up. You're getting new subprime and something called Alt-A products that led to record home purchases. In other words, they kind of took the brakes off of all the regulatory requirements for lending, and it was a feeding frenzy. People were buying stuff left and right, and they weren't properly qualified for those purchases, and that kind of led to some of the issues that we had. But let's get back to Freddie Mac and let's see how they explain it. They said, despite this demand and a rise in single-family total supply, entry-level supply continued a downward trajectory, declining to $150,000 a year. And even at its peak during the year 2000-2010, entry-level supply reached only $186,000 in 2004, the same year that home ownership peaked. The fact that the homeownership rate peaked the same year as the entry-level supply, according to Freddie Mac, is indicative of the strong impact that entry-level supply has on homeownership. Very simply put, what they're saying is that at that time, renters didn't necessarily have the ability or the means to buy houses. They didn't. That's the assessment that they made. Then they said that during 2010, new entry supply declined an additional 55,000 units per year until we get to the year 2020. And the estimate from Freddie Mac is that there'll be about 65,000 new entry-level homes completed, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so that's kind of where we're at. That's how Freddie Mac came up with that number of 3.8 million units. Now, how does that impact you? How does 3.8 million units of new housing stock for new entry homeowners, how does that affect you? Well, I think it affects you very favorably, but only if you're invested in real estate and the residential kind. I'm not talking about the retail stuff. I'm not talking about the industrial stuff. I'm not talking about hotels. I'm not talking about motels. I'm not talking about all the other forms of commercial real estate out there. I'm talking about the types of real estate where people actually live and call that place home. If there's nothing for them to buy, or if it creates a situation where they plan to buy, and because of competition, it's going to push the price up, maybe they step away from the buying side of the equation. Maybe they're just fine and happy with renting. And there's nothing wrong with renting. There's absolutely nothing wrong with renting. As a matter of fact, when you rent a place to live, you don't have to outlay as much capital as you would have to outlay to buy a property. And you also have the benefit of having a property owner maintain that property for you. Now, in our world, when we go in and we find a distressed piece of property, we fix up everything that could go wrong in the next 5 years. We fix it or we replace it. And the reason we do this is to keep our maintenance costs minimal. Yeah, because, you know, if you go into a property and you look at the air conditioning system, and the air conditioning system is older than your oldest child, and your oldest child is a teenager driving a car, that's kind of a red flag. That's indicative of something that maybe you need to take into consideration and replace. So if you put a new air conditioning system on that property, there's a cost associated with that. So you have to make sure you're buying the property at a certain price point so that it will support the cost of all the repairs that need to be made in order to turn that property back into its glory days, to make it clean, functional workforce housing for a family that wants it, that's willing to pay you fair market rent for that. So you think about it. You fix that air conditioner, you replace it. Maybe your roofing contractor said, yeah, you might get a year or two out of that roof. Okay, that's got to get replaced because we're not going to be dealing with leaks and things like that. So we got to factor what's it going to cost to do the roof. Maybe we went into the property and, you know, it's not necessarily level in there. So we need some foundation work. And along with that, we probably have to estimate some repair costs for plumbing because when you re-level a property, it can break some pipes. It's just the way it is. So when you're buying a property wholesale, fixing it up, capturing equity in the property, putting it back on the market, making it a beautiful place for a nice family to live, you're doing great. And you're acquiring an asset that no one else has acquired that's going to give you the opportunity to sell that asset in the future. When we come back from the break, I'm going to break down some numbers for you. This will make sense. Stick around.
One of the things I'd like to get across is that your whole life you wanted to make a change, right? But you've never had the time? This might be it, because we have online education that you can get involved in.
We're now going to bring the free workshop to the entire country and really the world. Anybody who is interested can participate in that. We're going to live stream that free workshop and have people online with you on the live stream, talking with you, answering questions, interacting. You're really going to get a great feel for the Lifestyles community from this. And you can register for that. So if you want to find out about us, this is a great way to take a look at us and what we do.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the seven principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. That's LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Warning. Listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. So 3.8 million units, a shortage of housing shortage. But I don't think it's a real housing shortage. I think it's a shortage when it comes to demand. And here's the thing. More people are demanding homes to live in that they own themselves than there's inventory in the marketplace. And what I've pointed out to you on this entire show is that there's plenty of evidence that supports the fact that we're just not creating enough new inventory to meet that demand. So what it means for you when you're a successful real estate investor is that you're going to be able to invest in houses that no one else can buy. You're going to fix them up. You're going to make them great properties. You're going to operate those properties for a set period of time, given your goals and objectives. And you're going to dispose of that property at a certain point because it will have achieved what you wanted it to achieve. Maybe that's a price point to sell it, or maybe it will have produced a certain amount of income, or maybe you've taken a certain amount of depreciation. There's all kinds of things to take a look at. But I think the sweet spot to dispose of a home that you've renovated and put back into service is around the 3 to 5 year mark. That's what I think is the sweet spot. But you've got to make up your mind as to what makes sense to you. And here's what I'm getting at. If we've got 3.8 million units of shortage, that means there's 3.8 million homes out there that Americans cannot buy because they don't exist. But if we go and we find those junky ones and we fix them up and we don't flip them, we're not doing the flipping thing, because when you flip, a lot of your profits are eroded by taxes. So we put those properties back into service as rental homes, We operate those rental homes. We put great people in them that get the ability to quietly enjoy those properties. And we hold them for a certain amount of time. And then we dispose of that asset. So let me just put your mind to rest. Any property you buy today, say you hold it for 5 years and you sell it, I think you're going to do okay on the increase in value of the property. Now, I'm not guaranteeing anything. I'm not saying my crystal ball is working. I'm just saying this. 3.8 million homes works out to be a demand for 760,000 homes a year. Nowhere on any of the research that I have done has the United States come close to that target number. And with the fact that building costs have been increasing and you have municipalities putting more and more constraints on the permitting process to allow for subdivisions to be built and new inventory to arise out of that, there are a lot of builders that aren't building in certain areas because there's no profitability for them. That's the other thing you got to take into consideration. I mean, home builders are not in the business of just producing homes for the sake of producing homes. No, there's a profit motive for them. That's the business that they're in, building new construction. So I think what that means is that if you bought an asset today and you did it correctly and you held that property for 5 years, you're probably going to be okay when it comes to what the eventual sales price will be of that property, because real estate historically increases in value over time. So let me run some numbers by you. There's another deal that came across my desk. One of the realtors I work with, his name is Trey. He sent me a home, really, really nice opportunity. And it's actually in a place where I own a couple of other real estate properties. So as soon as I saw the location, I went, oh, I know that neighborhood. I like that neighborhood. So he sent a property that was built back in 1992. So it's a little bit newer, but it's also in an area where I know there's a lot of foundation issues because the ground in Texas, and especially in that part of Texas, has a tendency to shift. So I already know there's probably going to be foundation work that needs to be done on this home. But that doesn't scare me because I got a great foundation company that I work with, so not a problem. The other thing I know is that this property is about 33 years old. So although it's not as old as some of the properties that we will look at and analyze, it's still 33 years old. It still has some wear and tear. I mean, 33 years is still 33 years. But here's the thing. The property is available for sale for $157,000. That's what you can buy it for. The after repair value, what like-kind properties all fixed up in that area are going for, is $195,000. Rehab to do the work is estimated right around $14,000. And then when you add in all the closing and holding costs, you're looking at about $24,000 applied towards that component. You're going to capture about $14,100 in equity. In other words, your price point to do this deal is $14,000 less than what the property is worth. Yeah, that's a really good thing. And I probably didn't explain that as clearly as I could, but just know there's an extra $14,000 of equity that you're getting. You're not pushing up against retail pricing. So your cash out of pocket to do this whole deal works out to be about $28,500. And what you're going to get is about a 50% return on capital gains. So by investing that $28,500 into that property, you're capturing a little over $14,000 in equity. That gives you a 50% return, or my numbers is 49%, on the capital gains. Now, let me tell you what this property can do on the rental side, because that's another thing that you need to take into consideration. Is this property able to generate income streams for you? So the property average rent is about $1,625. Cash flow-wise, you're looking at $461 a month. That's after you pay the normal expenses. So this property has the ability to produce a $5,500 a year income stream for you. Yeah, your cash on cash return is about 19%, which isn't bad. That's not bad at all, especially since you're also capturing equity. Now you're going to take depreciation on this property, and that depreciation is pretty much going to offset all of the income this property produces, because the depreciation schedule, once it works out, is right around $6,100 per year. Well, you're making about $5,500 per year, so there's no tax liability on that income because the depreciation has offset it. As a matter of fact, you'll also have about $560 of additional depreciation that you can offset elsewhere. It's a neat thing. But here's what I want to get to. I want to talk about the five-year hold, and we'll just assume five-year hold on this property. As you're owning this property and your resident is paying you every month, you're making the mortgage payment. That mortgage payment consists of principal and interest, probably also includes taxes and insurance. But the neat thing is when you make that mortgage payment every month, the amount you owe on the property goes down. Yeah, the principal reduces on a monthly basis, which increases the amount of equity you have in the property. And then if you look at the fact that real estate traditionally increases in value about 3.5%. And I like to use a real conservative number like that. Even though I saw from the National Association of Realtors, they're anticipating value increases in 2021 of anywhere from 5 to 9%. So their number's better than mine, but I'm going to go very conservative. Here's what this property can do for me after I hold it 5 years. At the end of 5 years, that property will have gone up $36,600. In other words, the future projected value is about $231,600. Because the mortgage will have paid down, about $13,900 will have paid down on that mortgage, giving me $13,900 in additional equity. Yeah, so when I pay that mortgage off, it's less than the mortgage amount when I took it out. That's the neat thing. So my equity at sale, holding this property for 5 years, should be just under $100,000, about $99,250. When I take the cost of sale away from that, which is almost $8,000, I am looking at an adjusted capital gain of $91,000, which means I have a 318% return on my original investment, which was $28,640. That's what happened to that original investment. And if you take a look at the cash flow that I also acquired, I will have acquired a lot of cash flow, about $25,000, actually more than that, which pushes my overall return to 415% return on investment. I'll tell you, there's a better way. And to find out how we do it, go to freeworkshoplivestream.com. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.